upholding scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captive of a scientific, technological elite.
We've signed a climate convention on the importance of economic instruments and free markets. We're included in this mammoth Agenda 21 document and the Rio Declaration. Now, let me be clear on one fundamental point. The United States fully intends to be the world's preeminent leader in protecting the global environment.
Coming up, Technocracy News. And greetings from Technocracy News and Trends. Patrick Wood here, editor-in-chief. And our first story today is going to concern your health. And the bottom line of this story is if you like your doctor robot and you like your AI robot software, why, you can keep it. The title of this is Paging Dr. Robot, AI Doctor Slated to Be the New Normal. Healthcare is changing. I wrote at the top of this article, evidence-based medicine's next step is to allow the AI to be the principal's virtual assistant and then to replace the medical professional altogether. If you refuse to do what the AI says, you will be branded as a rebel. The article states, the next time you get sick, your care may involve a form of the technology people use to navigate road trips or pick the right vacuum cleaner online. Artificial intelligence is spreading into healthcare, often a software or a computer program capable of learning from large amounts of data and making predictions to guide care or help patients. It already detects an eye disease tied to diabetes and does other behind-the-scenes work like helping doctors interpret MRI scans and other imaging tests for some forms of cancer. Now, parts of the health system are starting to use it differently with patients. During some clinic and telemedicine appointments, AI-powered software asks patients initial questions about their symptoms that physicians or nurses normally pose. And an AI program featuring a talking image of the Greek philosopher Aristotle is starting to help University of Southern California students cope with stress. Researchers say this push into medicine is at an early stage, but they expect the technology to grow by helping people stay healthy, assisting doctors with tasks, and doing more behind-the-scenes work. They also think patients will get used to AI in their care, just like they've gotten accustomed to using the technology when they travel or shop. But they say there are limits. Even the most advanced software has yet to master the important parts of care, like a doctor's ability to feel compassion or use common sense. Our mission isn't to replace human beings where only human beings can do the job, said University of Southern California research professor Albert Rizzo. Rizzo and his team have been working on a program that uses AI and virtual reality character named Ellie that was originally designed to determine whether veterans returning from a deployment might need therapy. Ellie appears on computer monitors and leads a person through initial questions. Ellie makes eye contact, nods, and uses hand gestures like a human therapist. It even pauses if the person gives a short answer to push them to say more. After the first or second question, you kind of forget that it's a robot, said Cheyenne Quilter, a West Point cadet helping to test the program. Ellie does not diagnose or treat. Instead, human therapists using recordings of sessions to help determine what the patient might need. Well, you can see where this is headed. AI thrives on data. Data can be collected from the human condition very easily through a number of sources. And once the AI program takes all of its material down, figures out what's wrong with you, prescribes a diagnosis, all this can be done without a doctor. And even though they say we're not going to replace doctors or other medical professionals, you know that they will in time. The second story, dear Greta, your climate worship is just rebranded paganism. My comments in this article are the underlying religious nature of global warming fanatics has been plainly evident to anyone who would care to look at it. But here's the bottom line. It is the return of outright paganism to the modern world. And you know that I have referenced many times the religious nature of climate change and global warming fanatics, it's unmistakable because when a cult is set up, it denies or rejects any evidence that would prove it wrong. And there is plenty of evidence that pokes holes in climate change and global warming. This article states we're seeing sexualized dances, hallucinations, worshiping nature, confessing sins and pagan animism, worshiping purified teen saints, all to promote a supposedly greater cause. Lynn Townsend White, Jr., an American historian from Princeton, wrote an influential essay in 1967 at the height of the Cultural Revolution in Western campuses, arguing that Christianity and Judeo-Christian values are responsible for ecological disaster and climate change. The essay, naturally, was adopted by generations after, ironically almost like a document of faith. The central argument went like this. White argued, quote, "The victory of Christianity over paganism was the greatest psychic revolution in the history of our culture. By destroying pagan animism, Christianity made it possible to exploit nature in a mood of indifference to the feelings of natural objects," close quote. If nothing else, the last few years should be enough to prove that Western civilization, a product of more than 1,500 years of Judeo-Christian values, is facing its most significant and sustained challenge in centuries from tribalistic paganism, a force that seeks not only to turn back time, but essentially to destroy the entire current edifice. As secular liberalism destroyed the fundamental ties that bind society, that is, faith, flag, and family, for the human instincts for faith, to believe, worship, submit, and fear, didn't just go away, but manifested in various other pre-civilized tribal ways. For example, a liberal seminary encouraged its students to skip classes to pray and confess sins in front of potted plants. In Switzerland, 250 people in full funeral garb mourned the apparent approaching death of a glacier. That is why members of Extinction Rebellion do what they do. Extinction Rebellion is an apocalyptic cult that wants to radically end everything around you, from your private cars to the burgers you eat and the plastic chairs in your yard. It is a cult that was formed after its founder took psychedelic drugs and prayed for social change. Members blocked D.C. and London intersections, twerking their way people in a pre-civilized era would perform a fertility dance to pray to Gaia. And then there's Saint Greta, our perpetual teen of sorrow. I have been comparing her worship to Joan of Arc ever since she was invited to the British Parliament, the birthplace of modern democracy. She was surrounded by buffoons nodding their heads like they were listening to gospel truth. I wrote about her long before the new woke capital fanatics adopted her as a pawn. In a recent speech to the UN, while clearly having an emotional meltdown, she told assorted leaders, voice trembling, that they had failed the children and history wouldn't be kind. The gatekeepers immediately hailed her as a brave savior, as well as a vulnerable autistic teen who shouldn't be bullied. So there you have it. Psychedelic hallucinogens, worshiping nature, confessing sins and pagan animism, worshiping purified teen saints, and throwing them up on the altar, bereft of their childhood, to promote a greater cause. And to that, witches hexing Brett Kavanaugh and having a Ouija board to invoke the spirit of Karl Marx, and everything old is new again. The reality, of course, is completely different. Much less than destroying the planet, climate change isn't even a settled science. Conservatives don't disagree that climate is changing. That is a straw man. Conservatives, however, are opposed to hysteria, have skepticism about the rate of climate change, and would like to see an actual cost-benefit analysis of the radical changes being demanded. More important than that, conservatives understand that climate change is cynically used by a certain section of people to justify their political goals of steering the West away from its way of life, a way they perceive to be evil or harmful, heteropatriarchal, and capitalist. How? Appealing to the faith-based part of human brains, the need for subservience, and propping up children as human shields. Consider a new letter by more than 500 scientists, which the mainstream media completely ignored. It urged the United Nations to have an open debate between scientists from both sides of the argument and states there's no climate emergency. The report goes on to say, among other things, and this is a quote from the report, "The world has warmed at less than half the originally projected rate. Climate policy relies on inadequate models. More CO2 is beneficial for nature, greening the earth. There is no statistical evidence that global warming is intensifying hurricanes, floods, droughts, and such like natural disasters, or making them more frequent. There is no climate emergency. Therefore, there is no cause for panic and alarm. We strongly oppose the harmful and unrealistic net zero CO2 policy proposed for 2050. In short, everything you've been told is wrong or flawed, and you're a chump who is being taken for a ride. This is a good story, worth reading, and the author is exactly right. Climate worship is indeed rebranded paganism." The last and most critical story in our trilogy today is written by an old friend of mine, Cliff Kincaid. The title of this story is Transhuman Fail: The Fishy Death of Jeffrey Epstein. I've written several articles on Epstein for a couple of different reasons. One, he was a member of the Trilateral Commission. That gets him in the door. And two, he was a dedicated transhumanist. And that gets him in the door too, because the transhuman movement is using the original philosophy of scientism to believe that they can conquer death through science. That's right. They believe that advanced science can be applied to the human condition to allow them to escape death and live forever. That was Jeffrey Epstein. I wrote at the top of this, my old friend who wrote this article, Cliff Kincaid of America Survival, Inc., understands the Trilateral Commission and the deep state. Cliff includes many details and connects many dots in his grand scheme of things style. And by the way, I was interviewed for this article, and several quotes originate with me. The late billionaire Jeffrey Epstein's pedophilia is what has interested the media, but his own blog, which is still active even after his death, suggested what he and his fellow elites were really interested in. He called it cutting-edge science. It is how the global elites intend to manage our lives. They already claim credit for, quote, rewriting our global culture. Jeffrey Epstein is a former member of the Mind, Brain, and Behavior Committee at Harvard, the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations, the New York Academy of Science, and a former Rockefeller University board member, his website proclaimed. Mr. Epstein is also an active member of the EDGE organization. You can't get higher up than Epstein. This is the creme de la creme of the American establishment. But as Patrick Wood, editor of Technocracy News and Trends, notes, he had no visible or logical means of creating wealth, although he spent a fortune on various pet projects. Wood comments that Epstein was definitely not like the typical member of the Trilateral Commission or the Council on Foreign Relations. Quote, he had no compelling outward qualifications as far as I can tell, but if you think about the TC and CFR as being potentially useful for nefarious purposes, then Epstein was the blackmailer, and his secret and real profession was sex trafficking and pedophilia. Wood adds, it has been alleged that every room in his mansion had hidden cameras that filmed everything and everyone, and that the videos taken were stored off-site in a still undisclosed location. These will never be released, of course, because they implicate so many of the global elite. These are serious concerns, and there is no guilt by association. But Epstein's mysterious death at this juncture in history is extremely significant. Attorney General William Barr tells AP that Epstein's suicide was a result of, quote, a perfect storm of screw-ups. But in the same way that then-candidate Donald J. Trump had brought up the case of the mysterious death of former Clinton aide Vincent Foster, calling it fishy, there are too many outstanding questions about the Epstein death. Like Foster, he is a man who knew too much. Blaming two federal prison guards for his suicide cannot be accepted at face value. A quick look into one of Epstein's affiliated groups, the EDGE organization, reveals a billionaire's dinner with photos of Jeff Bezos, owner of Amazon, and the Washington Post, Jeffrey Epstein, and many others. Guests have included the leading third culture intellectuals of our time, dining and conversing with the founders of Amazon, AOL, eBay, Facebook, Google, Microsoft, PayPal, SpaceX, Skype, Twitter, says the website. It is a remarkable gathering of outstanding minds, the people that are rewriting our global culture. This new global order is based on scientism, a philosophy attractive to many global elites, which holds that a small group of powerful people will manage the future through technology. Some of these people believe in transhumanism, the use of science and technology to enhance human mental and physical characteristics, creating a virtual super race of humans. Epstein, for example, quote, planned on using his own semen to impregnate the chosen ones and thus improve the human race, notes Wood. Epstein also planned to cryonically freeze his head and his penis so that future science could bring him back to life to live forever. In this way, Epstein believed that he would, personally, be resurrected and experience a form of eternal life. While this kind of approach sounds fantastic, the fact is that Epstein, a college dropout, was highly regarded by such elite organizations as the Trilateral Commission and Council on Foreign Relations and Harvard University. As reported by the Harvard Crimson, quote, he cultivated cozy relationships with top Harvard administrators, including a former university president, and pledged a $30 million donation to Harvard to fund the university's Program for Evolutionary Dynamics. Our work is about understanding the past, managing the present, and helping to build the future, it says. Epstein was accepted into the chairman circle of the CFR's top donors, but the group's president, Richard Haass, has tried to distance himself from Epstein after his death. However, the Trilateral Commission, whose membership is by invitation only, has not said anything publicly about his involvement with the organization. Research into the agenda of these organizations is as important as finding out those who were rubbing elbows or other body parts with Epstein and his young girls in his harem. How could someone with enormous wealth obtained through mysterious circumstances reach the pinnacle of power? Was it because of his keen intellect? The Trilateral Commission's goal has always been the, quote, deeper integration and greater globalization of the world's economies, but asserts that such a process has been jeopardized by populism and nationalism. That's a reference to the election of Donald J. Trump as U.S. president and the Brexit process of leaving the European Union and Britain. In the words of the Trilateral Commission, the future of humanity is threatened. The Trilateral Commission's summer 2019 report, Democracies Under Stress, reflects the current political thinking of the global elite who invited Epstein to join their prestigious organizations and attend their dinners. It states, quote, all of this stress is occurring at a time when Beijing is offering the world what many see as a viable alternative to democracy. The, quote, many is not defined, but speaking for themselves in terms of many, these global elites apparently see the U.S. experiment in constitutional self-government as less efficient than China's rule by the communist elite. This report from the Trilateral Commission features two pictures of former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger, a prominent member of the North American group. One shows Kissinger with Soviet President Mikhail Gorbachev, who fooled the West with glasnost and perestroika while pursuing the goal of world communism with the support of socialists and environmentalists in the West. Former top Jimmy Carter advisor Zbigniew Brzezinski also played an important role in the formation of the Trilateral Commission and served as its first director from 1973 to 76. By the way, his daughter is Mika Brzezinski, a host on the Trump-hating MSNBC cable channel. She is married to co-host Joe Scarborough. Both are members of the CFR. Media organizations represented by Trilateral Commission members include NBC News, Bloomberg, The Washington Post, Time Magazine, CNN, and The Wall Street Journal, and The New York Times. Clearly, they too play a major role in shaping the culture. The heavy media presence in the organization explains why commission meetings and reports are not examined critically or even covered. Hence, we can assume one is invited to join such an organization by invitation only and stay involved based on favorable coverage or non-coverage of what the organization actually does. That virtually guarantees that whistleblowers will never come forward with inside information about their plans. But Patrick Wood, who co-authored the book Trilaterals Over Washington, has watched the activities of the organization for many years and says there is no doubt that China has always been the key to the plans of the Trilateral Commission. He notes that Kissinger started the relationship with China under President Nixon, and then Brzezinski completed most of the communist countries' integration into the global economy under Jimmy Carter. The goal has been to develop an elaborate scheme of social engineering, a technocracy, which will be used to bring into being an anticipated new worldwide utopian system. In the elite view, an authoritarian system of governance such as China would allow technocracy to thrive more quickly than in Western democracies or in our constitutional republic. Indeed, China now leads the world in video surveillance firms that feature facial and voice recognition capabilities. The regime's social credit system of regulating the personal lives of citizens has already achieved some notoriety. Here, a softer version of the social credit approach has been adopted by social media, which collect personal information about users and control the news and information available to people. But America seems to be going the Chinese route. Amazon's recognition program promises, quote, facial recognition with artificial intelligence. Amazon does extensive work for the CIA and has just filed suit challenging the awarding of the Pentagon's $10 billion Joint Enterprise Defense Infrastructure, or JEDI, cloud computing contract to Microsoft. Bill Gates, Microsoft's co-founder, was photographed at Epstein's Manhattan mansion in 2011. Well, what the future holds is being left up to those who associated with Jeffrey Epstein. I would encourage you to read this article again and print it out just in case the website goes down someday or disappears or just gets squashed out of the search engines at Google and others. Keep a copy on file. You'll have something to give to your children or grandchildren when you try to explain to them what went wrong with America. Well, it might have started and ended with somebody like Jeffrey Epstein. I'm Patrick Wood for Technocracy News and Trends. See you next time.